good afternoon or morning, depending on what time zone you're in. This is Craig Brown, the National Cotton Council in Memphis. Welcome to the Western version of the Stacks SCO and Farm Bill implementation webinar. We have muted everyone's phone, so you will not be able to ask questions orally, but if you're looking at the screen, there will be a continual way of asking questions by typing into the chat line on the website. So at any time that you have a question, type it into the chat line and we'll try to work answers into the presentation. I will tell you that as soon as this presentation is concluded, it will be loaded up onto our website, and you will be able to access it with audio and the slides. You can also send in questions to info.cotton.org, and your questions will be directed to the proper person and try to get you an answer. So there's plenty of opportunities to hear this presentation again and to ask questions. And also, if you want to spread the word for people who weren't able to participate in today's call. So again, as a reminder, if you have questions at any time during the presentation, type them into the chat line. We're looking at it. We'll try to work them into the presentation. So let's begin. As most of you are aware, I think, there are fundamental changes in cotton safety net in the 2014 Farm Bill. Direct and countercyclical payments for cotton and all other commodities were discontinued. This Farm Bill, particularly for cotton, places a greater reliance on crop insurance products. For cotton and other commodities, we maintain the marketing loan. Across commodities, growers are going to be faced with a large number of new program choices, both for crop insurance and FSA programs. This program, this Farm Bill, is being phased in really over 2 years. The FSA programs all take effect with the 14 crop, and all the crop insurance changes really don't kick in until the 15 crop. And unless otherwise noted, the budget sequestration applies to farm program proceeds, cash proceeds, but does not apply to crop insurance indemnities. Since the Stacks program for cotton was not available for the 2014 crop, Congress made available to cotton producers a transition payment called the Cotton Transition Assistance Payment, or CTAP. This transition payment for upland cotton applies to the 2014 crop and equates to 5.4 cents per pound on all 2013 base acres times the direct payment yield. There is a separate $40,000 per entity limit, not affected by any of the payment limits in the Farm Bill. Hopefully by now, all producers have received or are in line to receive that transition payment. They became available after October 1st of this year. Let's begin our review of the insurance provision. We'll start with Stacks. Stacks is the acronym for Stacked Income Protection Plan. It's a new revenue insurance product available in 2015 for purchase on all acres planted to upland cotton. It's administered by USDA's Risk Management Agency. It's like any other crop insurance product. It's sold by crop insurance agents. You cannot purchase this product at an FSA office. It's another crop insurance product. It's an area-wide product, meaning that indemnities are triggered by the revenue experience at the county level. In some cases, counties have to be combined in order to be actuarially sound, and we'll talk about that in more detail. Stacks indemnities are not based on individual experience. They're on the county experience. Stacks is offered to the extent possible by practice, that is, by irrigated and non-irrigated practices. So you have a lot of flexibility in determining your Stacks plan. This slide illustrates kind of the difference between Stacks contracts in a regular buyout policy. On the left-hand side of the screen is an illustration of a typical buyout policy for individual coverage. It contains some level of deductible, and then with underlying coverage at varying levels underneath that. Stacks has a deductible as well. It's 10%. And then the coverage range starts at 90% and goes down to 70%. So in other words, if the county revenue, and since this is a county-wide program, an area-wide program, the county revenue is greater than 90%, then there is no stacks indemnity. If it falls in the range of 90 to 70, that's where stacks would kick in. And obviously, if it's at or below 70%, there's a maximum stacks indemnity. This slide gives you an example of how the stacks calculation is made. There's really three steps. First, a county revenue expected county revenue is determined, and that equals the insurance projected price times the expected county yield. In this example, the insurance projected price was put at 65 cents. For most of the Cotton Belt, that price for 2015 will be determined based on the December averages, the December contract average between January 15th and February 14th. It varies in some other earlier production areas, but that's generally the majority of the Cotton Belt. This is just an estimate of 65 cents for this example. The county yield in this case is set at 1,000 pounds, and therefore the county revenue yield times price is $650. The next calculation that goes into the stacks indemnity is to calculate what the actual county revenue was for that year. And it equates to the insurance harvest price times the actual county yield. In this example, the harvest price fell from 65 cents to 60 cents. The actual county yield came in at 850 versus the expected county yield of 1,000, giving you actual county revenue of $510. Since there is, and then of course the last step is the calculation of the indemnity. The indemnity is the lesser of an amount that is 90% of expected county revenue that exceeds the actual county revenue, or 20% of the expected county revenue. Now that's a mouthful, but basically there's two calculations for determining the indemnity. First, you look at the expected county revenue and you apply the deductible to it. So 90% of the expected county revenue in this example equates to $585. There's a cap on the indemnity of 20% of that expected county revenue. And in this case, 20% of that 585 is 135. So in this example, no matter what the difference was between the actual county revenue and expected county revenue, it couldn't exceed $135. But this example, the indemnity is actually $75, which is the difference between 585 and 510. So in this example, stacks would have paid $75 an acre based on these circumstances. Now let's talk about the availability of stacks in the Cotton Belt. Stacks will be offered in all counties in which the underlying cotton crop insurance products are offered, and that's basically around 700 counties across the Cotton Belt. So anywhere that you can buy upland cotton crop insurance, stacks will be available. For the most part, and to the greatest extent possible, it will be offered at the county level. If a county doesn't have enough acres or producers for actuarial soundness, then counties will be combined. And here are some examples of how you determine the status of a county. The criteria that RMA set for determining what is called a primary or standalone county is that a county, and this is by practice, irrigated and dryland, has to have 10 plus years of history of planting for that practice, 10,000 acres or more in the past 5 years, and 20 or more producers in the past 5 years. That meets that criteria, it's considered a primary standalone county, and the experience of that county alone will determine if there's a stacks indemnity for growers who who buy the policy in that county. We estimate that, our RMA estimates that approximately 80% of the cotton acres fall into primary or standalone counties. So a very high percentage are in primary counties. If a county is missing one or more of the criteria that we talked about and is adjacent to a standalone county, then it becomes what's termed a proxy county. And in this example, you can see the county to the left is a proxy county to the primary county. In that case, the experience in both the proxy county and the primary county are used to determine if there's a Stacks indemnity. So the combined experience, yield experience, and production experience in both counties applies to the calculation of a Stacks indemnity for growers in the proxy county. That does not change growers who are in the primary county or standalone county. They still stand on their own with their own experience. It only affects the grower that's in the proxy county. RMA estimates that an additional 7 to 8% of all the acres would fall into a proxy status. Again, if you can't get it with a proxy county, then you may have to go to what's called a circle group, and as the illustration applies, it would be a circle of counties surrounding the primary county. Again, it would be the experience in an entire circle for the growers who are in those surrounding counties determine if there was a Stacks indemnity. Again, the primary county stands on its own. Estimates are that's another 7 to 8% of the acres. And yet again, in very rare cases, if you can't get it with a circle, you may have to go to a double circle or NAS crop reporting districts, but in very rare cases does that happen. And then even the ultimate, it may be an outlier. And in an outlier, there's just not enough experience in a crop reporting district or double circle to get a correlation. And in some cases, particularly by practice, where there's not much of a practice, enough volume of a practice in an area, I'm not sure that really applies. It may apply in the West in a non-irrigated status, since most of your are irrigated producers. You may not find a non-irrigated status. You may have to go to too big a group to get one. In that case, we'd have to buy on one practice. So if there wasn't enough for an irrigated designation, so for a non-irrigated designation, you may have to go buy irrigated insurance. But for the most part, it generally applies the opposite of that, where there is mostly non-irrigated versus an irrigated practice. If you want to know where your county stands, you can go to RMA's site, on that site, on that URL on the bottom of this slide, and determine whether you can find out what status your county is. RMA will periodically review the status of these counties to see if conditions have changed, if acreage has changed, the number of producers has moved up or down, and it may change the status of that county one way or the other. It won't be every year, but periodically they'll review the status of these counties. A very important component of the Stacks indemnity is the calculation of county yields. Back in early October, RMA calculated the expected and actual yields for Stacks in cotton counties for 2015. They are using their own data. They're not using NAS data. This is for Stacks and for SCO. It's much more reliable data. It's calculated in one of two methods. The initial method, or the primary method, is to calculate what they call a yield trend by practice. The yield trend allows exceptional years, high or low, to be given less weight when calculating the projected yield. That has been compared to the most recent five-year Olympic RMA yields, and RMA is directed to take the higher of those two calculations. So it's either the trend yield or the higher of the five-year Olympic average actual RMA yields, the most recent 5 years. And this slide gives you just an illustration of the correlation between NASH yields and RNA yields by practice. It's useful for growers and agents to know the history of yields in counties. RMA has that information on their website. We have actually downloaded that database and put it into a more user-friendly format. And if you go to that URL site at the bottom of this slide, you can look up your county and get a historical idea of what the yields have been for irrigated and dry land if those yields are available. To give you an idea of what's happened in the past with the yields in your county, and kind of give you an idea of where of how stacks might have worked in the past. There's a lot of choices on determining your stacks purchase. Stacks is designed to include what is called a harvest price option, as is the case in most other revenue crop insurance products. A harvest price option is a feature that says if the harvest price is above the projected price, then the option will identify yield losses at the higher harvest price. Overwhelmingly, purchases of individual revenue coverage include this harvest price option. So when you go to evaluate stacks, you're going to have two choices. There's going to be stacks revenue protection, which will include the harvest price option, or you can actually opt to exclude the harvest price option. It'll be a little bit cheaper, but frankly, it's such a good option, and it's probably of a value such you'll want to consider leaving the harvest price option as part of the package. The coverage band is the maximum coverage band, as we said earlier, at its widest point is from 90% to 70%. That takes into account the 10% deductible. You're not required to purchase the entire band. You can do 5% increments from the upper or lower end of the range. And you can see in the third bullet point all the various options of coverage bands that you can make use of. If you want a less coverage, you can start at 75 and go up in 5% increments. If you want just upper band coverage, you can start at 90 and come down in 5% increments. Likely, given the value of stacks, you'll probably want the full range, but you do have some options to diversify your coverage. Another feature that is included in stacks and is also a common provision in existing area-wide insurance products is a feature called the protection factor. And the protection factor allows you, a grower, to choose in 1% percentage point increments between 80 and 120%. And we'll illustrate what that means in a minute. Under a 90-70 stacks policy, the protection factor doesn't change when an indemnity is triggered. It still must have a 10% county loss, but it will adjust any indemnity up or down by up to 20% based on the selection factor. It does increase the liability, and it will be a slight increase in premiums. To better illustrate it, this slide kind of demonstrates that. You see, with a stack at 100%, would have had an indemnity of 120% using the maximum range of 30%. However, if you purchase the protection factor, instead of that being $120 per acre indemnity, it would go up to just over $140. Now, if you decided you wanted to lower the cost of stacks and take less protection, you could actually take it down and do a negative factor of 80%, and the indemnity would go down to just under $100 an acre. It would be cheaper, and the 120% would be a little more expensive, but it gives you some options on diversifying your level of coverage. We believe that it's such a good feature that most people will likely opt to go with the 1.2% or 120% protection factor, but that is an option that you can discuss with your crop insurance agent. Now, one of the key questions and the two key points really in evaluating stacks is how much liability does it cover and how much does it cost? RMA has released expected yields for all counties, as we said earlier. They also published rates for 2015. Now, since tax is a revenue policy, the rates are published across a range of price volatility factors. And so you're going to see a range of rates, and until the strike price is determined, generally during that January-February time frame, RMA will not be able to calculate what the volatility factor is. But you can get that information at the actuarial information browser of RMA website, and there's the URL quote. Again, let me remind you, I'm going to be going through these slides too quickly for you to copy all this down. This full presentation is going to be loaded up on the Council's website, www.cotton.org. The Western Region presentation will be there with all the slides and the oral presentation, and you can get all this information off of our website when this presentation concludes. This slide gives you a comparison of the premium subsidy for stacks with other insurance products. And you can see there's varying levels of premium subsidy depending on whether you have individual, yield, or revenue coverage, whether you choose basic or optional units or enterprise units, or you opt to go area-wide, yield, or revenue products. But what you should note is that by law, stacks has the highest level of premium subsidy of any crop insurance product. It's locked into the law at 80%, and which means, again, obviously the producer only pays 20% of any premium for stacks. Let's look at some examples of some stacks calculations. And again, since we're basically in the West, we're going to be looking at irrigated practices. This is an example of Maricopa County in Arizona. Again, we're making some assumptions. The strike price we're using is 65 cents, as in the other example. The expected yield in Arizona, in Maricopa, Arizona for 2015 is 1582. You get an expected revenue of 1028. 90% of that is 925. The maximum dividend that takes into account the 1.2% protection factor, it's capped out at 20% of the expected revenue. So the maximum indemnity for 2015 in Maricopa for irrigated would be $247. So that would be the maximum amount of indemnity you'd expect under stacks. They give you a premium rate of 0.1827, 18 cents per dollar of coverage, total premium of $45 per acre, but the producer premium is only 20% of that and comes down to $9 an acre. So for $247 of maximum liability, a grower is paying $9 an acre. Move to Pinal County, another example in Arizona. Roughly the same numbers. The premium's a little bit higher, and the producer premium is just, a dollar higher. The maximum indemnities are roughly the same. Yields are roughly the same. So again, for $242 worth of maximum indemnity, the cost of the grower is $10 an acre. Fresno, California, falls in pretty much the same range. Maximum indemnity of $251, producer premium of $9. Lee County, New Mexico, there's a very small amount of non-irrigated production, and it shows in the low levels and the low yield guarantees. Principally, you're talking about irrigated. Again, falls in roughly the same range, $10 to $11 for producer premiums. Expected county, the maximum indemnity, a little bit lower, $167. Premium rates a little bit high, particularly for non-irrigated. I think it's probably because it's such a low yield, and that affects that premium risk. So I wouldn't pay a whole lot of attention to the $3, but $10 again falls in the range of the other Western state, other Western counties. Here's an example using Maricopa County yields about the variation in yields, and you see there's really, as you would expect in an irrigated production area, there's not much variation. There was a pretty good dip between, looks like, 97 and 2001. Some 600 pounds, but on the most part, you probably put a trend yield on that. It's probably running, 1,300 pounds. So you're not going to see much yield variation. And the beauty of stacks is it's a revenue product, so you're actually insuring yourself against a revenue fluctuation or price fluctuations. And here's a historical illustration in Maricopa County about, based on the revenue projections, the revenue calculations, of what the stacks indemnity would have been in those years. You see, it wasn't triggered every year, but when it triggers a pretty big number. So basically, you remember the premium rate of about $10 to $11 an acre. One year you had an indemnity of $300 an acre. Even though you skipped a couple years, you had an indemnity of around over $250, and even in 12, an indemnity over $100, you would have more by multitudes paid for the cost of the insurance over that period. And you can pretty well think that's based on revenue on price fluctuations. Throw in some production fluctuations as well. It would have been a pretty good deal over that period of time. Same thing in Pinell County. In fact, it actually in 12 got a little bit higher than $300. Not quite as high in 08, but again, probably would have paid dividends and would have paid for the coverage many times over. Fresno, same way. Lee County, a little bit more variation with irrigated and non-irrigated, but on the irrigated, pretty much the same experience. So for a small investment in premium, you're getting quite a bit of protection. Now, obviously, the past can't dictate the future, but this gives you just some historical perspective of if stacks would have been in place. And this is the gross premium, of course. You'd take the producer cost out of it, but we're talking about relatively low producer costs, low producer premiums, only 20%, somewhere in the $10 to $11 range, maybe even lower in some cases. Now, let's talk about stacks and the underlying coverage. Stacks is designed to complement existing coverage. It may be purchased as the only insurance policy covering that acre. It can be purchased in combination with any level of buy-up or CAT coverage. Excuse me. You will note that in many areas of the West, growers have opted for higher than 70% coverage, maybe 75, 100, 80, 100 with enterprise pricing. If that's the case, the lower brand of stacks coverage cannot overlap the coverage level of another insurance policy. So in other words, if you want to stay with a 75-100 buy-up policy and you want to maximize your stacks coverage would start at 75 instead of 70 and go to 90 because you can't double insure that acre. And so that's just something to keep in mind. And this chart demonstrates that. To the far right, you can put stacks on top of no insurance. You can put it on top of, and you have a pretty big margin of no coverage, uncovered range. And then as you build up your buy-up coverage, that uncovered range decreases. And obviously, if you get up above 70, you start getting into your maximum stacks coverage. And then you always have the 10% deductible. Now, to be fair, the underlying coverage is based on buy-up is based on experience on your farm. The stacks coverage is an area-wide or county-wide coverage, so it's not really totally apples and apples, but it does give you some level of protection all the way, really from 90 down to whatever your underlying coverage takes you. And again, if you're looking at the coverage, buy coverage over 70 cents, you might want to look at reducing that back down to 70. There's going to be a premium savings, but as a point I just made, you're trading off specific farm coverage, individual coverage, for area-wide coverage, the experience of the county. So you have to look at how does your individual yield experience correlate with the area-wide experience in determining whether that's a good trade-off. That concludes our discussion about stacks. Again, I would encourage you to type in any questions if you have any. But we'll move on to another product that's that's available to cotton producers and to other producers. It's a new product available for 2015 called Supplemental Coverage Option. We'll refer to it as SCO. This new product is for cotton and other crop insurance products beginning in 15. It may not be purchased on cotton acres already covered by stacks. Since they're both area-wide products, you can't double insure an acre with two area-wide products in the same acre. But you can decide on a farm-by-farm basis whether you want stacks or SCO in your cotton acreage. It's also available, SCO is also available for other commodities, depending on whether it's offered in 2015 for that particular crop. And that's an RMA decision based on what data they have available. So you have to stay tuned for other crops. But for cotton, we've been assured that SCO will be available in every cotton county in which Upland Cotton Crop Insurance is sold, same as stacks. So cotton producers will have full access to either SCO or to stacks. Now, one of the differences about SCO is that it must include underlying coverage because it provides coverage for a portion of producer's deductible. The indemnities are still triggered on a county yield or revenue, depending on what type of underlying policy you have. And the deductible for SCO is higher than stacks. Remember, stacks was 10%. The SCO deductible is 14%. And the way SCO works is the indemnity is triggered if the county yield or revenue falls below the deductible, which is 86% of the expected yield or revenue. And then the percentage by which this yield or revenue falls below that 86% determines the indemnity that is adjusted based on the value of producer's own indemnity. In other words, it reduces your deductible on your individual coverage. So it can actually extend all the way down to your to your full deductible on your policy, depending on the extent of loss in the county. The premium subsidy is not quite as high for SCO as it is for stacks. It's at 65% versus 80. And here's just a chart summarizing all of that. Underlying coverage, required to have it for SCO, not necessarily for stacks. Both are area-wide triggers. They have different deductibles. As I said, the coverage band on SCO goes all the way down to the coverage stacks. It's the bottom, the floor is 70%. We've talked about the premium subsidy difference, 65 versus 80, and how the indemnity is calculated. So some key questions you might want to ask yourself when trying to evaluate if you're a cotton farmer, do I do stacks or SCO, or do I do either? But between stacks and SCO, you might want to think about, and if your individual ABH is well above the expected county yield, you may want to give some consideration to SCO. Is your underlying coverage less than 70%? Obviously, the lower your individual coverage is, the wider the maximum indemnity can be under SCO. And remember that stacks and SCO both trigger off county experience. Here's a chart that kind of compares stacks and SCO at two different buy-up levels. This is a maximum stacks of 970, an SCO policy that's a 7100 policy, and an SCO policy that's a 6100 policy. The first three lines are the same because SCO for cotton uses the same yields as stacks does and the same price. The percent of expected revenue is different because of the different deductible levels, 14% for SCO and 10% for stacks. So you see a difference in line four. The maximum indemnity is different because of the different levels of coverage. Stacks has a maximum indemnity of 247. This is for Maricopa County. It corresponds to the other example. And the SCO maximum indemnity is less because you have a bigger deductible versus stacks. But if you look at the 80 to 60, the maximum indemnity increases only slightly, but because you have a wider range of gap and coverage, that SCO has the ability to cover if the loss is big enough. You see the premiums on line six, and this is how they're rated, and the producer premiums are very similar. So all in all, you'd want to evaluate where you stand with the county and decide what level of buy-off you want and whether you want to do SACs or SCO. Same example for Pinal County. Again, the rates are a little bit are comparable, a little bit higher for that, as you would expect, as you get a wider maximum density, quite a bit wider, versus for 60 versus 70. Fresno, again the rates are in the 950 range. Here's New Mexico. You look at the maximum densities are a little bit lower, rates are a little bit higher. For non-irrigated, pretty cheap insurance, but not much coverage. Now, the Farm Bill also made some other significant changes in the Crop Insurance Act, some enhancements. One of them was permanently authorizing enterprise units. And making permanent the 80% subsidy. In addition to making them a permanent part of the Crop Insurance Act, it provided growers the option of doing enterprise units by practice. So you can have an enterprise irrigated and an enterprise non-irrigated. Of course, enterprise units means you cover all of that practice that you grow in the county under one policy, but it's considerably cheaper. In addition to the enterprise units, growers can now buy different levels of coverage by practice. That wasn't the case in the past. You couldn't generally exceed your irrigated with your dry land or with your dry land coverage rate. Now you can have different levels of coverage to maximize your risk protection depending on your investment and what type of practice you have. A big change, one that was wasn't announced till late, was the adjustment in the ADH insurable yields. And this provision allows a producer the option to exclude any year from his ADH if the yield in that county, in the county that year is less than 50% of the 10-year county average. If that county triggers, then all contiguous counties trigger, and also allows for separate consideration of irrigated, non-irrigated acres. This was a late decision by RMA, and they're still working on the details, and they say they're going to have them by December, but we're quickly running out of December. So we'll see. Hope as soon as we have them, we'll make them known. If any of you decide to grow peanuts or are growing peanuts, there's a peanut revenue coverage. One provision that is correlated back to FSA programs, starting in 2016, anybody that purchases a subsidized premium crop insurance product, which is all of them, are going to be required to be in conservation compliance. And what that means is that the same conservation compliance provision you have if you're in the FSA programs, sodbuster, swamp buster, highly erodible land, farmed wetlands. So basically, if you've been in compliance in farm programs on some land, you'll be in compliance with crop insurance. Now, if you're farming ground that have been in farm programs, you need to make sure it also, starting in 2016, is compliant with conservation provisions. And it's really important that growers, by June 1st of next year, file this form AD 1026. That is the certification form that says you're in conservation compliance. So you have until June of next year to get this. And this form is filed in the FSA office, and that will be an annual filing. Now we're going to move away from crop insurance and talk about some other farm bill issues. Hopefully by now you're aware that some very key decision dates are approaching regarding FSA programs. By the end of next February 27th of 2015. Landowners have to decide whether to retain or reallocate covered commodity bases. This farm program, all these farm programs are calculated on payment on base acres for a crop. For the most part, they're decoupled payment acres. So obviously, the status of your base acres on the farm is very critical for your program eligibility. There's a methodology for reallocating allocating the base acres based on recent plantings. Also, you have the ability to update your payment yields. Likely they haven't been updated since probably 2002. So if your recent history of planting those particular covered commodities, it's 90% of the most recent four-year average in the years you planted the crop. If that's higher than your program yield, then you're going to want to update your program yield. Now, the law says that the landowner has to do it, but the regulation provides that if the tenant has an all-encompassing power of attorney, that the tenant can do it on behalf of the landowner. So it behooves you as a tenant or a landowner to have good consultation between tenants and landowners, make sure everybody knows what decisions have to be made, and they're made in a timely manner. That's a one-time irrevocable decision. Yep. Until February 27th to make that choice. Otherwise, your bases remain where they were, your payment yields don't change. Likewise, a month later, end of March 2015, designation has to be made whether you want PLC, ARC County, or ARC individual for each base acres, for each covered commodity base acre on your farm. Again, power of attorney applies. You can make the case for your landowner. This is a very important decision. All tenants and landowners have to come to the same decision about each base on each farm. You must all agree. You can have a different decision for bases on other farms, but each farm stands on its own, and each base has to be determined one way or the other which program you want them in. There is a penalty for not deciding in time, and it's very severe. If you can't reach a decision or you don't reach a decision, you're ineligible for 2014 program benefits, and the default is that all your base acreages go to PLC for 15 forward. So it's really important for the tenants and the landowners to get together on both of these decisions, but particularly important on PLC and ARC decisions by commodity per farm. You're still not through at FSA. Even after you make all these decisions, sometime between April 15th and the summer 15th, you have to actually go in and sign up for the program. This farm bill requires an annual sign up. You'll likely be able to do 14 to 15 together since they're so late in getting it going. But you'll be required to sign up every year. And then you won't receive the first payments for the 14 programs until after October of 2015. Payment acres for PLC and ARC are calculated on base acres, as I said earlier. They're actually on 85% of the base acres for each of the covered commodity bases and generic base attributed to the covered commodity. Generic base probably is one of the more confusing new provisions of this bill, but it's a very good provision. It provides a lot of flexibility for our grower. What the generic base is, generic base equals the cotton base that was on the farm as of the end of 2013. So if your farm had cotton, upland cotton base on the farm in 2013, that base is now converted to generic base starting in 2014 and thereafter for the life of this farm bill. You can't change it. You can't update it. You can't move it. If you have it, you have it. But if you do have it, you have a lot of flexibility because any covered commodity planted on that generic base adds to the payment acres of that the already existing base on the farm. And you can make a different program crop decision each year on which crop that actually gets attributed to generic base. I think the easiest thing to do is look at an example. And this is our famous 200-acre farm example. I say it's famous because we've worn it out over the past presentation. In this particular farm, in this example, this is a 200-acre farm that had, in 2015, 100 acres of wheat base and 100 acres of generic base. this particular grower decided to grow in 2015. I planted the whole farm, 100 acres to wheat and 100 acres to cotton. And so the question is, how much wheat payment acres does he have? How much wheat base does he have effective for 2015? The answer is 200 acres. He already had 100 acres of wheat base historically. The planted acres to wheat is attributed to the generic base. In effect, he planted the cotton on the decoupled wheat base. So he has 85% of 200 or 170 payment acres for wheat, depending on which program he's in, for 2014. Let's say in 2016, he decides he's going to plant soybeans or barley on that farm. Or he's going to plant wheat and barley. And that will be divided up a portion to the generic base, and will increase the payment acres for each one of those crops. Now, let's say he didn't have any wheat base to begin with, but he plants wheat. He generates wheat base for that year on the generic acres. So one way to remember it is that the historical base for covered commodities is decoupled. You don't have to be eligible for those payments. But for the generic acres, it is coupled, so you have to actually plant the crop to get additional credit. So I'm assuming everybody understands that. I see you nodding your heads on the phone. And so we're gonna keep moving. And if not, then I'll expect some tight questions. Cotton continues the marketing loan. There's a new formula for the cotton marketing loan. It's the two-year average of the most recent two-year average of the AWP, the range of 45 to 52 cents. The loan rate for 2015 has been announced already at 52 cents. We are now faced with some challenges on the marketing loan, in that the marketing loan gain for cotton and any other commodity and LDPs for any commodity now fall under the payment limit provision starting in this farm bill. And let's look at payment limits. There is a new payment limit provision in this farm bill. It's $125,000 per entity. That includes PLC and ARC payments and, as I mentioned just now, marketing loan gains and LDPs. There is a separate payment limit for peanuts, but the peanut program still includes those four categories. Another payment limit is applied to crop insurance. But the problem comes in allocating the marketing loan gains to the overall payment limit. And without going into a lot of detail, USDA does not have the ability to very quickly and on a timely basis correspond marketing loan gains to the grower's payment limit, and that probably won't be reconciled until maybe even next year. So you may be surprised to learn that some of your payment limit has been taken up by cotton marketing loan redemptions or LDPs, and may have less of that limit to apply to PLC and ARC. We do have a briefing paper that will be a part of our website presentation that kind of gives you an idea of what the status of this payment limit process is. It's very frustrating. The industry is working as closely as we can with USDA to make it as transparent and as timely as possible, but we're only making slow progress there. The only fix, unfortunately, is a legislative fix to take it back out from eligibility, and we're looking at possibilities there, but we'll have to wait to see. Likewise, in addition to payment limit changes, the AGI means test has changed in this farm bill. The threshold was raised to 900,000. However, it now applies to all AGI, not a breakdown of farm and non-farm AGI. If you exceed the three-year average 900,000 AGI, you're ineligible for PLC or marketing loan gains and LDPs. There's a new verification procedure in place, whereas once you file your certification for AGI, it is then forwarded to IRS for verification. There had been a problem with that holding up eligibility. We believe that there's now a process in place where you can actually, you or your marketer can redeem the loans without waiting for the verification, or you can redeem or get LDPs yourself without waiting for verification. However, if the verification comes back and says you did actually exceed that AGI, you'll have to repay the benefits. There are a number of resources available in helping you make some of these program decisions. There's a Texas A&M Ag and Food Policy Center decision tool that may aid you in deciding between the FSA program choices. They also have a crop insurance module that may help you evaluate crop insurance decisions. The University of Illinois has a similar tool. You can go to these URLs and get that information. Risk Management Agency has a Farm Bill page that talks about all the crop insurance provisions. Likewise, FSA has a page to talk about all the FSA programs. But what it boils down to basically is, for crop insurance particularly, it's going to be incumbent upon you to work with a very knowledgeable crop insurance agent, one that can evaluate all these new options that you have available to you. It's going to be incumbent on you to know what type of questions to ask, how to evaluate what type of risk you're willing to absorb. And between the combination of crop insurance products and FSA programs, that will be the vehicles that are available to you now to minimize production and revenue risk in this new area of farm programs. So, again, work with your insurance agent. Make sure that he or she is knowledgeable on the new programs, and then know what questions to ask. Go to as many meetings as you can. If you think of additional questions after this session, be sure and send them to us. But that concludes the presentation. So far we haven't got any questions typed in, which means either one or two things. You thoroughly understood everything I said, or I've totally confused you enough to the point you can't even ask questions. So I'm hoping the former, not the latter. But again, if you have any questions after this is over with, you can go to our website, info.cotton.org, and submit questions. Again, you can get this, you can listen to this presentation ad infinitum until it kind of makes sense to you. But again, we'll hold on just a second to see if anybody's got any last minute questions. I'm not seeing anybody typing. So again, I want to thank you for your attentiveness, and I hope you like this format. This is something that's kind of new that we're using to communicate with our members and also with interested parties. Hopefully we'll continue to make good use of this vehicle, this medium. So again, I thank you for sitting in the session and participating in this, and wish you a happy holiday season. Bye-bye.